Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Hal Young. Welcome, Hal.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. Let me give you a little bit of background on Hal. He is a CVA, which is a Certified Valuation Analyst, which is a person that is registered with the National Association of Certified Valuation Analysts. It's a license requirement, isn't it, that you actually have to sit for a test? And
Yes, absolutely. It's a credential that you earn through both classwork and testing.
Excellent. And he's also a certified public accountant, and he's accredited in business valuation. So given his background, we're going to talk a lot about accounting, but also valuations, because really that's so important in today's world for privately held companies as well as big companies. The valuation of a business is an art, it's a science, and Hal's going to tell us all about it. When we talk about business valuations, Hal, what are we talking about?
Well, what we're really talking about for a closely held company is what would be the value of that company if it were publicly traded. We're looking to try to find for a company where there is no market, what would be its price? How would it trade if there were a market for it?
But there's no comparable. I guess the difficulty I'm having with that is that a publicly traded company, there is a market for its shares and people are actually trading its shares and there's a valuation that the market applies to it. For a privately held company, it's all restricted shares, right?
That's certainly correct, and it's certainly controlled by those companies. And one of the things that's happened in business valuations since I've been involved with business valuations over the years is that it's become more of an academic discipline, and that there are people who are doing research with publicly traded companies trying to find those factors or those characteristics. What is going on in the public market that we can bring over for these companies where there is not a market for them?
Fair enough. How did you get started in valuing businesses?
I got started in valuing businesses like I got started for a lot of things in my career. It was really more a matter of happenstance. Mm-hmm. I worked with small businesses over the years doing consulting work and started a number of years ago getting asked the question, Hal, can you help me with buying a business? Hal, can you help me with selling a business?
Are there good reasons for doing a business valuation?
Well, that's one of the expressions that I like to use, is that I say that I do business valuations for both good and bad reasons.
Okay.
And the good reasons being things like exit strategies, succession planning, sales of stock to key employees. And then, unfortunately, on the bad reason side, there may be shareholder disputes or damage situations, or even in the area of divorce, where businesses need to be valued where there's a dispute involved.
So what are we trying to achieve when we're valuing a business? What is the metric that we're trying to determine?
Well, what the IRS would tell you is that, and the commonly held definition is that what would a business sell for in the marketplace, willing buyer, willing seller, both being aware of all the facts and neither one under duress to act.
So that's what we call fair market value,
That's what we call fair market value, yes, sir.
So the goal is to determine fair market value where there may be no market for ownership of the company. How do you go about doing that?
Well, again, as I said before, we really, and it's kind of a curious situation where you're taking a private company, but then you go over to the public marketplace to try to find metrics that help you in determining those values. Because really, valuation is looking at, and again, whether it's public or private, it's really looking at what is the economic benefit that we hope to achieve in owning this entity, and what risks do we associate with that? And as you know, we hear it every day in the public marketplace. People talk about companies being undervalued or overvalued. Mm-hmm. And that's really where people are just making their own determinations on what's the benefit that I'm going to get from owning it and what are my risks in taking on that ownership.
In a public company context, you say that there may be some metrics or factors that you look to apply to the private company situation. Can you give us some examples of what they may be?
Well, one of the examples would be, as I said, the risk factor. And there have been studies over the years to show what risks historically have been in owning a company. For example, we know, and it's right in the news these days, that the most secure investment is U.S. Treasury bonds. And then as
Is it?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's making, we may find out in a couple of weeks that it might not be.
We certainly may. You're absolutely right. And that's a hot topic today as to what that risk is.
But assuming that it is.
But in valuation theory, we have assumed that that is. And then what is the risk as I move into investments that have less security than what we hope the security is of the United States government?
So you're moving up the risk curve, and therefore the discount and the assessment of the value may be severely impacted as it becomes more risky.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay,
we say that for a variety of reasons that the publicly traded companies are less risky than the privately held companies, and you're absolutely correct. We're moving up a risk curve.
Now, you've got so many different types of companies in this area alone. We've got service companies. We've got government contractors that are service companies, IT companies. We've got some manufacturers, real estate companies. That must involve a lot of different variables. Where do you get all the information for valuing these disparate businesses?
Well, one of the things that happens when you do a business valuation, and why a lot of people become annoyed with me when I'm doing a valuation, is that you need to learn everything there is to know about that company.
Okay.
You want to go into the company and find out about what their financial history is, what their operations are, what their quality of management is, everything that you can learn about the industry that they're in. The economy and what that suggests for the future of that company. So you really become quite a pain to people in the company as you come in and try to dig in and learn about that company.
Almost like an auditor, but on steroids.
In some respects, it absolutely is, because, again, as I said before, what you're trying to do is to assess what are the risks that that company has, and does it have more or less risk than what other companies might have.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the valuation process, how we go about valuing a company. And there's a truism that you've expressed to me before. You said that publicly traded companies have managed to maximize income, but privately held companies are usually managed to reduce taxes. What's that all about, and how does that impact valuation?
Well, that's one of the things that I mentioned before that's kind of a curiosity, that when you're looking at a privately held company, you go into the marketplace to look at publicly traded companies. And what that truism is in valuation, and you'll find it in lots of valuation articles, is that managers of publicly traded companies are managing to maximize their income, because price earnings ratios that drive stock prices that benefit both their shareholders and themselves, if they have stock option programs and whatnot, they're trying to maximize that income in order to maximize that value of that stock.
While privately held companies.
Privately held companies, on the other hand, are looking to minimize their taxes.
Period.
End
of story.
That's exactly right.
So some of the examples that you might give of how the private companies reduce their income and therefore perhaps artificially reduce their real profit. What are some of the things that they do to cause the income to be reduced so taxes are reduced?
Well, an owner of a privately held company or the shareholders of a privately held company may pay themselves more salary than what it would take for a person from the outside to come in and do what they're doing. They may offer themselves more attractive benefit packages, more comprehensive benefit packages, a higher percentage being paid for by the company. There may be company vehicles that they're able to use both for corporate business as well as personally. Not at all uncommon, particularly in our area around here, is that the owners of the company may own the building that the company is in.
Right.
And so the lease will not be an arm's length lease, because they may want to have more income over in the real estate entity than they do in their company. So
they're paying a lot of rent out of the corporation and reducing its income down to next to nothing.
That would be one of the things that certainly can be done. So those kinds of things where privately held companies are behaving differently than our publicly traded companies would be behaving.
Now, we have a lot of entrepreneurs as clients, and a lot of my clients are entrepreneurs, and a lot of people who listen to this radio show are entrepreneurs. And let's say they've built a company. What does an entrepreneur do? What kinds of situations will involve valuation? Should they have a valuation before they plan their exit strategy? Give me some feedback on that.
Well, it certainly, for most entrepreneurs, as they've built their business, and as we know, again, from the demographics of the country, we have an aging population of entrepreneurs. Many of them are interested in, at some time, exiting from their companies. And for the most part, when you talk to people about this, they say that I'm either going to go public or I'm going to sell my company. And I think for many businesses, the going public option is not really an option,
right,
simply because they're not big enough to go public. There's not going to be the interest in them given the size and scope of the business. And then once you've gone public, not only is the cost to go public extraordinarily high, but the compliance costs of being a publicly traded company are high. So you have to
incredibly high with Sarbanes-Oxley and all of the other requirements under the securities laws.
Absolutely. And you just really have to have a business that is of sufficient size that it's going to be cost effective in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that most businesses in the United States are small businesses, and they're just not of that size.
So in helping justify the price that you might sell the business to, say, the employees or to a group of investors or a combination of the two, a valuation may come in pretty handy.
Yes, absolutely it would.
Now, what should an entrepreneur do to get his company ready to sell? I've talked about it many times on this radio show, but from your perspective, what should they do?
Well, I think the first thing that an entrepreneur needs to do is to start a lot sooner than most entrepreneurs think that they should. You often find that an entrepreneur will be only thinking perhaps a year in advance of that, but I would argue that they should be thinking maybe 3 to 5 years in advance of that.
And I agree with that.
And one of the things that they should certainly do is to sit down with themselves, maybe sit down with their family, and what is it that they want to accomplish as part of that exit strategy? What do they want to do personally? Do they want to stay involved with the business, perhaps in some sort of consulting or operational capacity? Do they not want to be involved with that business at all anymore? Do they want to do something else? What is it that they want from a lifestyle perspective? And then, of course, the second thing important today with, the way our economy is going and the uncertainty, is that what do they want to have in terms of their income and their quality of life after they exit from
sold.
The business. That's right.
Right. A lot of people decide not to sell after they figure out that after taxes, they may not get a whole lot for the company. It's better just to keep the company going and to pull out all the earnings in the form of compensation or something along those lines.
That's certainly true. But again, that is a very serious conversation that the entrepreneur needs to have with himself or herself as to what their expectations are.
Now, what about in terms of positioning the company for sale, if you're really planning out 3 to 5 years, there could be some pre-transaction planning where you might be able to gift minority interests or sell minority interests to family members or trusts for the benefit of family members. Do you get involved in those types of valuations as well?
I have been involved with those. If again, that is the exit strategy that the entrepreneur wants to have, that passing the business on to the next generation, that would certainly be an area for business valuations for estate and gift planning.
We're talking with Hal Young, who is an expert in valuation, a CVA, and a CPA. Hal, with our remaining minute that we've got in the show, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs and other business people who are trying to position their company for sale?
Well, I think going again back to that maxim we talked about at first, how is the company managed? And I would say to the entrepreneurs, you need to start thinking about managing your business for earnings, not to minimize taxes, because you want to position that company as attractively as possible as you can for the buyer and to reduce any expected risk that the buyer might have.
Hal, if people want to get in touch with you to talk about business valuations, how do they get in touch with you?
They can contact me at the office in Fairfax. I'm at 703-385-6055, and I'm on the internet as Young Accountancy Group.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you for your kindness in having me here.
And everyone, listen next week for another special topic and special guest on areas of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. Have a great week, and join me next week.